Welcome to Dark Corners with David Allan Voiles. Dark Corners is brought to you by Gestalt Media, an independent publishing company dedicated to serving independent artists. Dark Corners is a horror podcast and may not be suitable for all listeners. Therefore, discretion is advised. Season 2 consists of episodes written and narrated by David Allan Voiles, based on a story suggested by the Halloween-themed musical work Witch Works, created by dark ambient musician Mombi Uhlman. The 13th episode concludes the season in October of 2020. Chapter 1, Witch Works. Daniel opens the large iron door and enters the dark, cavernous hall. The sound of machines is deafening. The constant whir of engines, the rhythmic clanking of metal, the sizzle of electricity from a Jacob's ladder. On either side of the open floor in front of him, industrial sewing machines sit in rows that stretch out to an endless horizon that is impossibly contained within the building. To his left and right, tending the machines, are workers, men and women clad in wool and linens of decades past, who sit and stare blindly straight ahead at the group on the opposite side. Daniel knows they're blind because their eyes are white without iris or pupil, their hands moving skillfully nevertheless, creating stuffed cats, balls, and other small toys. The entire space, cathedral more than factory with its vaulted ceiling and upper walls made of stained glass depicting ancient toys rather than saints, is bathed in crimson light. On the mezzanine above him that runs along the three walls he faces, Daniel sees dimly lit alcoves housing more workspaces with large machines, all with arched Gothic entrances like catacombs perversely appearing above ground. Dark figures move within the shadows, busy with tasks which inexplicably strike Daniel as unholy. At the center of the mezzanine stands a large set of wooden double doors with ornate carvings of gargoyle faces frozen in obscene expressions. On either side of those double doors, two offices, each with a single large desk, are contained within alcoves similar to the workspaces. A man with a pencil-thin mustache and rolled shirt sleeves with a vest and loosened tie rises from his desk and walks to the rail where he stands in a posture of authority overlooking the factory floor. He then descends one of the two sets of iron steps that provide access to the mezzanine from either side of the factory floor, which places him near the center of the building. He walks with purpose among the workers until he comes to a stop beside a female who, apparently unmindful of him, continues sewing. Reaching into a carpet bag beside her, he retrieves a baby that cries and writhes in his uncaring arms and walks to the other set of stairs to make his way back up to the catwalk above them. Directly in front of where Daniel stands in awe in the middle of the floor, high up on the mezzanine, the tall carved doors open. A bearded man in a business suit comes forth and turns toward the assistant who approaches on the catwalk. He receives the infant, and all the machines on the factory floor stop. In the silence that follows, he holds the baby above him as the workers lift their blind eyes up towards him. In unison, they chant a verse in a language that Daniel cannot recognize. The chanting stops with their voices echoing in the vast chamber, and the man who appears to be the boss of the factory hands the child back to his assistant, who withdraws into the darkness behind the open doors with the crying child, and the doors close behind him. As one, the workers turn their heads back so that they resume their sightless stares straight ahead, and all the machines roar back into life. The bearded man looks down at Daniel. He smiles, and then begins to laugh, a chuckle at first, that grows and becomes a full-blown guffaw. Ha 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 ha! Daniel, though terrified, is physically drawn towards this powerful figure. He feels himself lifted from the factory floor, his arms and legs hanging uselessly as he floats closer and closer. The face gets larger and larger until Daniel is swallowed within the darkness of the laughing mouth. Daniel opens his eyes to find himself lying face down in damp earth. It is still night, but now the air is cool, and he sees that he is outside the walls of the factory. He stands and brushes dirt from his face and hands and looks back at the ominous walls behind him. The roar of the machines continues, and Daniel has only one goal: to leave and get as far away as possible. He runs a familiar path he remembers from his childhood. Pumpkin vines grow thick on every side, thicker than he ever recalled, and as he runs, he sees that light glows oddly in patches among the leaves. He sees that some of the pumpkins have been carved while still on the vine into Halloween faces, and he recognizes many of the jack-o'-lanterns he had made in his youth. On he runs, and the pumpkin patch turns into cornstalks. Rows and rows of cornstalks, so many more than those that grew on the farm where he grew up. Fear wells up inside him, driving him to run faster from what he does not know. He knows only that he should run, run, run! With his heart still pounding, Daniel opens his eyes, rolls onto his side, and fumbles for the phone on the nightstand. He sees it's his sister who's calling. "Deirdre, what's wrong?" "It's Daddy." Her voice is flat, emotionless.
What do you mean?"
"He's dead. You need to come home." Deirdre was waiting on the porch of their family farmhouse when Daniel pulled up 2 days later. It was a full day's drive to Maria Bay from the college town where he worked, and he had needed a day to wrap up the loose ends at the university. Fortunately, the spring semester had ended, and his department chair had said she would handle the distribution of his summer classes to other faculty and help him with the administrative task of seeing to the leave he had requested. "Glad you could finally make it." "Deirdre, do we have to start off like this?" Daniel opened the back door of his Jeep and pulled out his old leather suitcase. "I got here as fast as I could." Deirdre stood silent with crossed arms, frowning as Daniel climbed the porch steps, but then nodded. "You need any help bringing in your stuff?" "I'll get the rest later. I could really use a beer if there's any in the fridge. I didn't have time to shop for groceries. I've been busy meeting with the bank and the funeral home, calling relatives, and writing the obituary for the paper, not to mention running a household with two toddlers." It was Daniel's turn to just nod. His sister made no move to embrace him or even open the screen door for him. Following him inside, she said, "I took the sheets off his bed, but didn't know where you'd want to stay, so I didn't make it back up." Daniel let out a big sigh and set his suitcase at the foot of the stairs. "Yeah, that's fine. I'll probably just take my old room for now." They both stood in awkward silence for a moment while Daniel looked around the living room. "So what can I do to help? What needs to be done?" Deirdre stared at him for a moment and then said, "Nothing today. It's almost 5, so we couldn't get the lawyer anyway, but we'll both need to see him tomorrow. There's a bunch of legal stuff we need to go over." "Yeah, I can imagine. But listen, you know I'm not going after any of Pop's stuff, right? You're the one who stayed here and looked after him, especially after Ma died." "Not sure that's the way good old Dad looked at it." Deirdre narrowed her eyes as she studied her brother.
"What do you mean?"
"Well, you're the boy. The one that counts." "The one that counts? What's that supposed to mean?" "Exactly that. The one he wanted to pass everything down to. The one to take over the farm."
"Deirdre, you know I've never wanted the farm. That's why I left. I thought Pop understood that."
"He never accepted that. He always talked about how one day you would come to your senses and come home, and then together he and you would take back what he had been forced to run out to other farmers.
get some livestock, and finally get the farm going full steam. He even talked about getting the old factory running again. Daniel rolled his eyes. The witch works? You gotta be kidding. Deirdre just raised an eyebrow. None of that was ever gonna happen. I made that clear when I left to go to school. Didn't stop him from believing it, though. Have you talked to the lawyer? Deirdre shook her head. Lawyer says we both need to be there to go over the will, but I've got a pretty good idea based on stuff Papa said through the years that he's left everything to you. That's crazy. I don't want it. Might as well wait until we hear what the will actually says. Daniel nodded. Deirdre's tone changed as she asked, So what do you plan to do now that it's just us? Wrap things up and get back to Franklin U as quickly as I can, I guess. I got a leave of absence for the summer, but I really need to be back teaching classes in the fall. Deirdre continued to look at Daniel for a moment, and then said, Well, I probably ought to get going. Warren's picking the girls up from daycare, but I need to pick up some things to throw together for a quick supper. She paused. You want to join us? Daniel shook his head. I'm really pretty beat. I'll grab a beer and a burger somewhere and then crash pretty soon after. Suit yourself. I'll call you in the morning after I talk with the lawyer about when we're to meet. She made her way to the front porch, and Daniel followed and stood where she had been upon his arrival. He watched her get into her 4Runner and drive down the gravel drive without offering so much as a wave. Once her car had disappeared in a cloud of dust, he walked back inside and stood staring at his suitcase as the screen door slammed behind him. He looked upstairs and then took a few steps toward the back of the house where his parents' bedroom had been. He stopped, looked at an old family portrait on the living room wall, shook his head, and wandered into the kitchen instead. On impulse, he opened the fridge, and behind some casserole dishes with food crusted on the edges from multiple reheatings and stained Tupperware bowls that looked like they should just be thrown away, he spied 3 cans with the familiar blue ribbon label. Thank you, Jesus! He grabbed a PBR, popped the top, and returned to the front porch where he surveyed the scene before him as he took a huge swallow. Here's to you, Pop. The field stretched out before him, furrows of earth stretching out in neat rows, prepped by the sharecroppers his father had made arrangements with for the planting that would take place soon. Daniel walked down the gravel drive and headed off toward the empty barn to find a path he had walked hundreds of times as a boy. The Thompson farm lay several miles inland, which meant the land was not as flat as the area near the coast. There were gentle hills, which allowed for a small hollow where water tended to collect after the frequent showers. The soil was sandy enough that it could not rightly be called a marsh, but the small dale was densely packed with growth. All his life, every November, he and Deirdre would throw their discarded jack-o'-lanterns, along with those of all their friends, into this small sunny dale, where, totally untended and in defiance of sound agricultural practice, pumpkin vines would appear on their own the following spring, volunteers that produced the next Halloween's jack-o'-lanterns. The sun felt warm on his shoulders, and he savored the pleasant smell of the freshly turned earth as he found the entrance to the familiar path and left the dirt road. There could be a worse fate than running a farm, he thought, taking another swig of his beer. I wouldn't mind at all if I had graded my last freshman humanities paper. It wasn't long before he had entered the green valley where the path took him past the sunny dip where the pumpkins had grown, and into the softwood forest of pines which offered a welcome shade. Within 10 minutes, the path broke into a clearing, and he faced the ruins of a huge brick building that had once boasted tall paneled windows. The structure seemed as out of place in that setting as he had felt on his father's farm at 17. Daniel walked up to what had once been the entrance to the building. The double iron doors lay on the ground, the frame having given up the ghost many years before. But above the open doorway was the faded image of a snarling, white-eyed black cat painted on the brick above the factory name that was also just barely legible. On sudden impulse, Daniel raised his beer in his second toast of the day and said aloud, "To Black Cat Toy Factory, may you rise again one day." That concludes this episode of Dark Corners with David Allan Boyles. Music for Dark Corners was written and performed by Mombi Yuleman and can be purchased at mombiyuleman.bandcamp.com. For my latest projects, you can always find information at my official website, davidallanboyles.com. And I invite all of you to join our Dark Corners Facebook group, where you can find background information on posted stories, previews of upcoming stories, and all kinds of other dark content. Hope we meet again soon in the Dark Corners.